Back at it, you and I chatting it up once again, starting off a brand new week, Monday, January 5th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. Full analysis and opinion on the previous weekend's U.S. military raid that captured former Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife to bring them back to the U.S. I had some opening comments on that. And then throughout the show, we also heard from CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum, University of New Haven Associate Professor of Homeland and National Security and International Affairs, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Connecticut State Republican Party Chair Ben Proto, CBS News military analyst, retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, and finally, Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill for our complete coverage. Now, a lot of you probably know what I'm going to say here, but I'll say it anyway. My usual two words when we have people running around like chickens who've had their heads cut off and people running around and going nuts, what do I usually say? Come on, kids. Come on. What do I usually say? Two words. Calm down. Relax. I know that's another word. We'll say that for the singular word. Relax. Calm down. Of course, we're talking about what happened over the weekend in Venezuela, where Nicolas Maduro, the sitting president there, although who some say should not have won, should not have been in their presidency there in Venezuela because he only got, 30 or 35% of the vote. And the real woman who should have won, who won the Nobel Peace Prize, she's living in exile. Nobody knows what's going to happen with her, even though, you know, he was in there. Maybe he shouldn't have been. He was the, at least to some people, not to others who said he was illegitimate, talking about the recognized by a lot of folks leader of Venezuela. Now, we probably wouldn't be happy if some company came, country came in, although about half this country would be happy, I guess. Judging by the poll numbers I see and the approval numbers, but there would be a good deal of people happy and unhappy if some country's military came in the dark of night, you know, escorted Donald Trump and Melania Trump out of the White House. That's not happening, nor should it. I believe the security folks, the guys and gals at the White House, the U.S. military, they may have something to say about that. But having said that, the first thing we need to do is calm down, is relax about this. Despite what some of our members of Congress have said, our five Democratic House members, our two Democratic Senate members, we're not at war with Venezuela yet. I mean, could we be? Yeah, I guess. Last time I checked, all the sources I have available to me here at the station, not that I can tell. We have no declared war going now on Venezuela. We don't. It's an interesting situation there. Apparently there was a warrant, there was a bounty on this guy. So, and look, let's right up front here acknowledge a few things. Could this be for Venezuelan oil? Yeah, it could be. Nobody knows yet. There's been some allusions by Mr. Trump and the White House saying, hey, we're going to have to take control of the oil. Okay, if it brings gas down to $1.85, who's not in favor of that? Relax. Take it easy. I'm being tongue-in-cheek. Sort of. But the big thing, and again, we've got everybody going crazy here, Mr. Blumenthal, Mr. Himes, Mr. Murphy, everybody's going nuts. Oh, we've launched an invasion. There are going to be boots on the ground. And yeah, the president has made some allusions to that. Maybe there will be, but then again, maybe there won't be. And apparently I see going on here right before we went on that the White House is finally going to brief some members of Congress as to what's going on there. Maybe. All right. So there you go. Now, I will venture to play for you, during the day today, the reactions, most notably of Congressman Jim Himes, Fairfield County Congressman, 4th District Democrat, who sits as the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee. So there is stuff, and I know there's a tendency from you folks who like my show and listen to my show, that there is a tendency for my audience to poo-poo what Jim Himes says. I get it. I understand it. But keep in mind that Jim Himes, in his position as the ranking Democrat, meaning the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee or the Intel Committee, he gets to see stuff that neither you nor I nor a lot of other people in Congress don't get to see. Mr. Blumenthal, Richard Blumenthal, the Senate let loose with a very brief statement. I'll play that coming back for you. And then there's Chris Murphy, who was saying stuff on CNN that even had Dana Bash firing back questions at him. I'll give her credit for that. She doesn't let people slide when she picks up something that she needs to follow up on in the course of an interview. So we start with this. We'll take the break and we'll branch off into a bunch of different things here that I want to bring up when we talk about this. Now, I put this question up yesterday, the day before. I think I did it early yesterday. When did I do this? I did this at, in fact, I'm looking at the admin page for Facebook here, 10:11 yesterday morning, because I was embroiled in doing something else, but I had a few moments here. I said, let me ask my fine and savvy listeners what they think and what you folks think, too. And listen, we're up to discuss this today. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong, because we don't know. We don't know. We don't know. And there are people all around there saying, well, if this, we should have done this. No two situations are alike. Could there be ulterior motives here? Yeah, there could be. Has U.S. foreign policy over the years been carried out with ulterior motives? It certainly has. Over and over and over again. So again, we're up and underway here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Question is, do you support or oppose U.S. military action capturing Venezuelan President Maduro and his wife to face U.S. drug charges? You okay with this? Yes or no? And I know there's some people answering saying, hey, well, I don't know yet. And I can kind of understand that. Because what we try to do, and even though I do a show of this variety like this, I try and it keep myself from saying, well, this has got to be it. Because it isn't, because we don't know. We don't know as many of us as would like to forecast here. I think we have some magical powers, some secret decodering. Trump said this, so he must mean this. I don't know. I just don't know. But what is the ulterior motive here? None of us know. But there are a couple of things I find interesting about this, and we'll get into that. But you tell me what you think. This is a what do you think day today. I don't think we're going to be right or wrong about anything here. How can we be when we don't know? And when we have members of Congress on both sides of the aisle saying, well, obviously, blah, 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 blah. No, not obviously, because we don't know. Even though somebody says something out of the Trump White House, whether it's him or Marco Rubio or people like that, or J.D. Vance, we don't know whether that's a big head to fake or not. So we're up and underway. Do you support or oppose U.S. military action capturing President Maduro and his wife to face U.S. drug charges? You tell me, talk or text. We'll get right to all the phones and all that. If you want to chat about this, again, nobody's right or wrong today. Just want to hear what you think about this. Because I found it fascinating over the weekend that some people I thought would be against this think this is a good idea. And I saw some people who I thought would think it would be a slam dunk, and they came out, no, can't do this. So this is interesting. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. You know, and it's okay, no matter what politico you are of whatever party, to look at something and say, geez, I hope this isn't happening X, Y, and Z. But again, and I'll be playing some of the snippets later on from Senator Blumenthal and Senator Murphy and Congressman Himes. And listen, the Republicans do it too. But I really think in times like this, we have to be careful, relax, calm down. We didn't invade Venezuela. We don't have boots on the ground there yet. Who knows? We might. That's my point. My point is we might. But again, you know, your messaging, it's got to hit hard in the first 24, 48, 72 hours here. I get it. I understand it. But can everybody please, for our own sanity, calm the freak down? And we've got Mr. Blumenthal and Mr. Murphy and Mr. Himes talking about it like it's the Middle East and it's a quagmire. And if you break it, you own it. Okay, we get it. Relax, for God's sake. And again, who would be against gas at $1.75 a gallon? Hey, listen, if we get the oil from Venezuela there, brings gas prices down, get a couple of pretty good shortstops and second basemen there, right? Some middle-inning relievers, get all those kids up to the majors. What's wrong with that? It's a win-win-win-win. You know what is interesting? Before we go to the phones, Jeff and Bob, hang on. And I mentioned this before. But boy, Venezuela, you go back and you can spend hours reading about how prosperous Venezuela was. Late 80s, early 90s, very high standard of living. They were an oil juggernaut. And then the lefties came in. Why do people vote for these leftists? Well, just look at New York, I guess. I don't know. Maybe the have and the have-nots get angrier at election time. I don't know. But I remember in the 70s and 80s, late 80s, early 90s, saying, oh, I knew friends of mine who went to vacation to Venezuela. Oh, Caracas is like an incredible hot spot in Central America and all that. And again, they, you know, Maduro comes in and shuts down a lot of the oil there, which is why I guess Trump wants to go back in. But man, oh, man, learn yourself something before you scream like it's the end of the freaking world. It's not. Relax. Jeff in Westport leads us off. Jeff, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Happy New Year. Haven't talked to you in a year now.
Yes, sir. Happy New Year. What's going on?
Yeah. So I'm going to end the argument right here for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say one word.
Yeah.
Noriega.
Well, yeah. Same thing.
We did the same thing with Noriega that we're doing to him because he was a drug lord.
Mm-hmm.
So what? And it's funny, the three Karens you mentioned, Blumenthal, Murphy, the three Karens, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it all the protesters are white little old ladies and, you know, just silly people when you talk to a Venezuelan person?
A lot of them are happy.
We love this.
A lot of them are real happy.
Ever.
Yeah.
We'll go back to Venezuela if it goes back to what it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's funny because all the little old lady white people and the Karens out there in the world, they're the ones protesting.
They have
no skin in the game.
You know what? And Jeff, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. You know, there are a lot of allegations. These are paid protesters. If you can get paid to protest, I'll put on a couple of prosthetics here so you can't recognize me. And if you'll give me 15, 20, 30 bucks an hour, I'll go out and do it. Listen, I understand there's a lot of Venezuelans in the U.S., a big contingent of them in Florida. A lot of them are happy. A few of them are angry. A lot of them have trepidation. I get it. I understand that. Because remember, there will be and there are loyalists to Maduro there. So it's not like everything is bubblegum roses, herb tea, and biscuits now that he's gone. Now, I guess there's this Delcy Rodriguez, who is who's the VP. She's going to work with the U.S. now. I found something very interesting about her that was posted today from a Venezuelan reporter. And he's kind of telling the world about what her role may be in this whole thing. It's fascinating. I'll get to that a little bit later in the show because it is a few paragraphs. But again, I found that interesting from somebody who's followed her for her career. Before news, Bob in Weston. Bob, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good, Bob. Good. Happy New Year. How are you?
Good. You too, Paul. Logistics.
Yeah.
Look at a map. I'm not you, but you know.
Yeah.
But if you look at the map of where Venezuela is, it's a stone's throw to Cuba.
Yeah.
Cuba's been a thorn for how many years? Can you imagine a country the size of Venezuela
that
is just run by, you know, the most horrible people? Wait, where was I going with this? Yeah, Africa.
Yeah.
China has gone into Africa.
Yeah.
Russia has gone into Africa. There's thousands of Chinese troops there. I mean, we have to take this back. And when I say take it back, I mean all our oil refineries, all our oil companies were kicked out by these bad guys.
Yeah.
And logistically,
there is.
And I applaud Donald Trump.
And Bob, along the lines of your thinking, and thanks, Bob, I'll maybe get to this a little later. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal that says exactly something akin to what Bob just said. This is the long game here. And okay, most people say it's just about the oil in Venezuela, whereas this story says, and hopefully I can nab a couple of segments from it for you later, this story says, hey, listen, Iran, North Korea, China, this is the, you know, a lot of this is telling those countries, hey, don't blank around, especially in our hemisphere. Interesting thought. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it is all about oil. You tell me. Either go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/voiceofct. Talk or text. What do you think of this whole thing? Is to make your blood boil? Are you there cheering? Or are you kind of like, eh, got to see? 203-333-942-2333-WICC. The legal part of all this. Can a country just go into another sovereign nation and get somebody if there's a bounty on their head? U.S. law, Venezuelan law, international law? I don't know. I'm confused. That's why we often have Thane Rosenbaum, legal expert extraordinaire, CBS News, on the program with us to hash this all out. Check out his website, ThaneRosenbaum.com. Thane, good afternoon. How are you, my friend? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Paul, my buddy.
All right. How does this work, Thane? Internationally, oh, it's not an act of war. It's serving a warrant, whatever. Outline this for us.
Well, that's true. President Trump made a big deal out of this being one of the greatest military operations in the history of the world. The more he said that, the more it led to a question of when Marco Rubio said, well, the Pentagon was only asked by the Justice Department to pick the guy up. This is not a military exercise. We used it. It's the only way to get it. You can't send DEA agents or FBI personnel to pick up a foreign leader.
Yeah.
You got to, you know, have an elaborate Zero Dark 30 maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we called upon special operations people and SEAL team members.
Yeah.
But don't, that's not a military thing. This was not from the Pentagon. This came as a request from the Justice Department. This is a simple extradition. So normally in an extradition, you call a president or a leader of another country and say, there's someone in your country that we need for a court. And so we have either an extradition treaty with you or we're requesting for you to cooperate and hand them over. Normally, we don't hand over the leader of him, of the country. You don't ask him, would you just willingly get on a plane?
Listen, we have an Uber coming by. He should be there momentarily.
Yeah, do you need to pack? Because so that's what makes this complicated. Now, if you ask the Trump administration, they're going to say, what leader of a foreign sovereign nation? This guy is a dictator.
Yeah.
He was not popularly elected in the democratic proceeding. We do not recognize him as the leader. A woman, you know, who won the Nobel Peace Prize was defeated by him. That's the actual leader of their country.
Yeah.
He's a drug dealer with portfolio. He has a nice house. But he's not in a cartel officially, but he is an accomplice to the drug cartels and the Venezuelan gangs. That's the argument that we're making. But as a general principle, yes, the United Nations takes this stuff very seriously. All the member states of the in the United Nations are supposed to treat one another peacefully and respectfully, and that means you don't go and kidnap another foreign leader unless you take this position. He's not a recognized foreign leader. And that's what changes it. And the reason you kept hearing, again, it was confusing because they kept saying military operation. The reason they wanted to focus on it being an extradition, because they're saying it's hard enough to convict a criminal defendant in a federal courtroom. But if you have to add international humanitarian law into this and the rules and the laws of armed military armed conflict, right? You don't want to introduce yet international law on top. You want to say, no, this is a pretty straightforward drug case. This is just a drug case. We do this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
The DEA and the FBI work on these things. We've been developing this case for a very long time. The only problem is how to pick this guy up.
Got it.
And we needed the military to pick him up. So that's the argument. That doesn't mean that his lawyer is not going to make.
Well, that was going to be my final question to you, Thane. Like, is this going to taint the case or at all or not?
They're going to have a hearing. He's going to ask for some evidentiary hearing. At some point, his defense lawyer is going to say two things. The manner of the evidence you're using should be excluded for any number of reasons, right? Executive, privileges or attorney-client privileges or privileges of a foreign leader. Mm-hmm. So some of the evidence that you're using should not be used. It should be excluded. I'm not sure you're going to win that, but I think even more importantly, they're going to say, how can you even have him in this courtroom?
Wow.
He's not, you have no jurisdiction over my guy. You have to have personal jurisdiction in the United States in order to begin a case. Otherwise, it's subject to a motion to dismiss. Do you have jurisdiction over the body? And the answer, they're going to make is he doesn't have any connections here. He doesn't own an apartment in New York City, right? I mean, these are issued literally law school questions,
sure.
Right? What creates contacts, right? And so they're going to make the argument. He has sovereign immunity. He's the leader of a country. The stuff, you may not like what he was doing, but he was working pursuant to his obligations as the leader of a country.
Mm.
There's a lot of leaders that you don't like what they're doing, but you don't go kidnap them. So they're going to make that argument. I don't know if they're going to win the argument. Why? Well, there is precedent. Noriega is here. And this case, I think, is stronger than Noriega because there's a 6-year indictment already in the books, right? So this is they would have done this in the year 2000 if they could have. And two, the argument that the indictment seems to be suggesting is you have no idea the connections that he and his wife and kids had with the cartels. This guy was as if he was the godfather of the cartels. He made money from them. His wife was getting monthly stipends. They had direct contact. He protected them. He gave them use of various military things in order to keep them safe.
Wow.
So this guy is not just the leader of saying, because, he might make the argument, hey, I'm a victim here. These cartels ran my country.
They threatened me if I didn't do it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You're blaming me for the cartels.
Wow.
I would have done anything to get rid of these guys. And you're blaming me. We'll pick those guys up, not me. But I think they have the evidence that shows his hands were very connected to everything that the cartels did.
Excellent. Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, thank you, and I'm sure we'll be chatting about this in the years to come. Thanks, Thane. Appreciate
it.
Thanks.
Bye, Paul. Thank you.
Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News. Check out his website, Thane, T-H-A-N-E, Rosenbaum, R-O-S-E-N-B-A-U-M. Thane Rosenbaum. Not only is the Venezuelan community here in Connecticut concerned with what happened over the weekend, but of course the Ukrainian folks of Ukrainian descent also here in Connecticut, Russia, Ukraine, that is still going on. Supposedly, there's some articles being discussed among allies of Ukraine this week. So joining us right now to talk about that and Venezuela, and we've had this gentleman on numerous times over the years here, Dr. Matthew Schmidt joins us, Associate Professor of Homeland and National Security and International Affairs at the University of New Haven with a long and distinguished academic career, also helping the folks out in Congress understand stuff that maybe it would help that they understood. Matt, hi, it's Paul. How are you, sir? Good afternoon. Happy New Year.
Hi, Paul. Happy New Year to you, too. I'm doing well.
Yeah. Thanks. So Matt, before we get to the Ukraine-Russia thing, which, oh, by the way, is still going on, and, oh, by the way, may be at a critical juncture again, give us the long view of what you saw here over the weekend with the Trump White House decision to get Noriega, to get, you see how old I am, to get Maduro. It's all a fog, Matt. Well, you know, one dictator after another. What are your thoughts on what happened over the weekend?
I think that critics of the operation are unfairly put into a corner, and they're treated like they're in favor of Maduro, right? No one is bemoaning, no one is crying over Maduro's regime, you know, at least at this point. We don't actually know, but apparently being, you know, knocked down, right? But the way in which these things happen matter. You know, you bring up Noriega, and I used to teach at a place called the School of Advanced Military Studies. And its most famous operational planning was the work that was done for the invasion of Panama. And the thing is there, people forget, people say reflexively, they say, oh, well, you know, this is like Panama, right? Why is it any different? For a number of reasons, right? One, the president was consistent in the arguments justifying it. Two, the proximate cause was the death of a U.S. Marine and threats to American citizens.
I remember that,
right?
Yeah.
Four, the you know, one can argue that its existence at the Panama Canal completely changes the context vis-a-vis Venezuela, which is not of the same kind of strategic importance. And so I think it's really important to be able to separate out criticism of Maduro and criticism of the legality of this operation with, you know, praise and admiration for the capacity of the American forces to do what they did astoundingly without any casualties.
Yeah.
And remember that we don't know how many innocent Venezuelans have been killed. Right. And so we have to stack that up here, too, to say is if we had engaged in a quote unquote law enforcement operation in Chicago and 200 innocent Chicagoans were killed in order to get a mob boss.
Yeah.
Right. Would we consider that justified?
Yeah. Good point. Good point. And the one thing, too, before we get to Russia and Ukraine, Matt, is I'm reading here from kind of stuff on the left and stuff on the right, too, and across the spectrum, is the long game here, Matt, might be, for example, to keep whatever oil that Venezuela has and can still extract, even though their physical plants aren't great, to send a message to and keep all that from, say, Iran and North Korea and maybe Russia and China, kind of the long game here. You buy into that at all or not?
No, I mean, again, we have to look at the premise of this and this idea that the nationalization of Venezuelan oil was somehow contested by American companies simply isn't true. It's ahistorical. They went along with it. This was a common thing at the time. So there is no oil that's owed to American companies. And then Venezuela simply doesn't produce a lot of oil that goes to Iran or Russia or China. It's actually very little. And again, we have to separate out the goal from the means. Right. And the way in which this is being done has long term implications for American power. The effect of what happened this weekend isn't what's going to happen on Tuesday. It's what's going to happen 10 or 15 years from now.
All right. Russia, Ukraine, you and I have discussed this a lot of times. Thankfully, Matt Schmidt and the guest is Dr. Matthew Schmidt from the University of New Haven. Is this anywhere near, Matt, coming to any sort of a resolution? Can they twist Putin's arm on any of the land he wants here to not go for that? Or is he still in the driver's seat here?
Well, he's still in the driver's seat, and what you saw in Venezuela contributes to that. Yes, Putin was an ally of Maduro, but the argument that the United States is making to justify this is the same argument about illegitimacy in the regime in Ukraine and a criminal, you know, enterprise that Putin is making. So it actually supports him while at this, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, a legal standpoint. And then in addition to that, he was an ally of Maduro. So he's not going to be inclined to then suddenly go along with the U.S. request to move towards a ceasefire. He simply can't do it. It's a political non-starter for him now because of the invasion. Matt, in Venezuela.
Yeah, and Matt, we keep hearing about all these reports about, well, security guarantees, and Ukraine is more likely to sign on to something with security guarantees. And I have openly asked on this show and other experts, what does that look like in the end? Do you have any idea, in your experience, what security guarantees would be, quote unquote, in anything that hopefully eventually ends this?
Yeah, it's actually very clear. What Zelensky has done is he is discussed with Europe and essentially constructed a way that you get a kind of NATO version of Article 5 mm-hmm. outside of NATO with this coalition of the willing. And what he's saying is I want to put in place standards that say if these things happen, if these red lines are crossed by Russia, then these 30 some countries agree to come into Ukraine and defend us. And that's what he's setting up. And he's essentially saying, if I can get that, then I don't care if I'm in NATO or not.
And finally, Matt, I'm reading here of, well, he may also be looking for some version, maybe altered, of a DMZ or a demilitarized zone, kind of a buffer zone there. Any thought on that?
So it's part of the discussion. And the problem with it is that Russia would not allow a force that would be large enough, say around 30,000, and would be capable enough to defend against the military as capable as the Russian force, because that basically means it's going to have to be European troops.
Mm-hmm.
He simply won't allow that. And so the discussion about a DMZ is, I think, a sort of dead letter. It's not something that is realistically going to be agreed to. And so the security guarantee is a second way, sort of a backdoor way of getting that effect, that deterrent effect.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt, always great to have him, Associate Professor of Homeland and National Security and International Affairs with a long, distinguished history in that, currently at the University of New Haven. Matt, thanks once again. We'll be in touch. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Paul. Take care and Happy New Year again.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, peace out, as he said, and Happy New Year.
If we are starting another endless war and putting troops on the ground in a quagmire without any national security objective and need, count me out. Maduro is a cruel criminal dictator. But I'm deeply concerned that President Trump may be embroiling the United States in another endless war. We've seen conflicts begin by administrations in the past without an end game.
Connecticut senior U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal over the weekend regarding what the U.S. did in Venezuela. We also heard from Jim Himes. A rather lengthy interview, too, was had on CNN by Chris Murphy. So all of our Democrats in Congress, 5 House members, 2 Senate members, putting out this cautionary tale. And the Republicans, though, have their opinion on this. Joining us right now is my buddy, my pal, Ben Proto, chairman of the state Republican Party, whose message was a little bit different than what we heard from Mr. Blumenthal and company. Ben, good afternoon, my friend. Happy New Year. How are you?
Well, my friend, how's everybody in the Pacelli fan?
It's good. And has the agita been calmed down with you from hearing from hearing our congressional delegation speak of an endless war that's coming up? What are your thoughts on this?
I have no idea where they're coming up with that. We went in, we did what we did, we left. There's no troops there. There's no American troops on the ground. We arrested a criminal, brought him back to stand trial, someone who's responsible for the death of millions of Americans through the illegal drug trade that he's been profiting from. You know, Paul, all you got to do is look at the hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of Venezuela and around the Venezuelans around the country and around the world who are applauding and are thrilled about this. To sit there and be Dick Blumenthal or Chris Murphy or Jim Himes and say, yeah, this was a bad thing. I don't understand it. You know, President Bush, when he was running for president, promised to, you know, halt the flow of fentanyl and drugs into this country that kill millions of people every year. And he did just that. And he gave Maduro every opportunity to do this on his own without the U.S. intervening, without the U.S. doing what it did. And he just thumbed his nose at us, told us to go jump in a lake. And now he's standing trial as a drug lord, as he should.
You know, Ben, I often wonder, and I said this earlier, look, members of Congress, especially Mr. Himes, who was the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee, you know, Ben, to one form or another, and you and I have talked about this over the years with various members of Congress, they see stuff that we don't get to see, even though we have a wonderful press covering this stuff. And, you know, Ben, sometimes I just wonder, are the people that are saying this is awful are just saying it's awful because they have to, when really behind closed doors, they may say, well, yeah, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I don't know, the Dems, the Republicans, everybody has their base and want to consume this stuff. But the stuff I heard over the weekend, like you, I was just, you know, it was big time eye roll for me.
Yeah, and it's, you know, look, I heard, you know, Jim Himes say he's a member of the Gang of Eight, which he is, and that they weren't consulted. Well, they were just, you know, while our troops were in the air on their way, they were informed of what was going on. And, you know, quite frankly, and though I want to believe that, you know, Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and you know, Jim Himes have been told about this, they would not have put our troops in danger. They would not have gone blabbed about it. But I'm not sure that's true of every member on the Democratic side who wouldn't have put it out there and really endangered our troops. So there's, you know, you got to weigh some of that. And I think that's what the president and the administration did with that. And look, we know Venezuela is one of the richest countries in the world when it comes to natural resources, between their oil and their minerals, their precious metals, mm-hmm. that, you know, should really be put to the use to help the people of Venezuela, not to line the pockets of a few oligarchs like Maduro. And as a result, you know, I think we're looking at a situation where we can bring about a form of government in this country that will be beneficial to the people of Venezuela, as well as beneficial to the people around the world with the goods and resources that Venezuela has that the rest of the world needs.
Ben Proto, chair of the Connecticut Republican Party, responding to our other members or our members of Congress, all Democrats, over the weekend. Ben, be good. Always good to have you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Look forward to my friend. Thanks for having me on, as always, Paul.
All right. There you go. Ben Proto there. All right. So how did they pull it off? No American casualties. Yes, apparently there were some injuries, and those soldiers and sailors apparently are going to be okay. But what about the tactical aspects of this U.S. raid over the weekend to snatch the president and the first lady there of Venezuela? Joining us right now on this sort of stuff, we welcome back CBS News military analyst, U.S. Army Colonel, retired Jeff McCausland joins us. Colonel, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you? And Happy New Year.
Great greeting, Paul, and Happy New Year to you.
So, Colonel, you tell me, we had 0 hour on Saturday. How many months, weeks previous to that does an operation like this take to be planned out?
Well, I think you got to go back all the way to September, even prior to that. The president signed a finding at that particular moment, authorizing the CIA to conduct operations in Venezuela. Now, that included very meticulous intelligence gathering operations and also probably the use of signal intelligence, satellite intelligence now being more closely focused on Venezuela to get information about military, air defenses, all that kind of stuff. And then specifically about Maduro. Where did Maduro go? We know he moved around for security reasons. What was the character of his security force? They got even down to the details on it. Was he right-handed or left-handed?
Wow.
What did he like to eat? What was the name of his dog, for goodness sake? So that kind of massive intelligence gathering. And then, of course, you begin building up this massive military force in the region. You know, large numbers of U.S. military forces. We have the largest military force now by November in the Caribbean that we've had there since the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962.
Yeah.
And then we begin, of course, training for the actual operation. And it seemed to me, I got an inkling that something was going down when they positioned Task Force 160, the Special Operations Aviation Unit out of Fort Campbell, which conducts special operations missions, flew the SEALs into Abbottabad in Afghanistan, for example. And then we know now that Delta Force that conducted the operation began training on this several months ago to the point of actually building a replica of the stronghold Maduro was in and using that to train troops to go in there and go through, you know, branches and sequels if something went wrong, if they had to blow a door, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and doing all that. And then you move up to actual conduct the execution. And, of course, that called for the launching of 150 aircraft from over 20 sites, both aircraft carriers at sea, land-based. And those aircraft not only strike aircraft, but you had aircraft that were going to conduct electronic warfare operations, conduct more signal operations, conduct aerial overflight and surveillance. And you probably also had satellites then focused on Venezuela in much greater detail. The whole precursor, large-scale cyber attack on Caracas to take down the power grid, to put it in darkness. Then you had strikes against air defenses to divert the attention of the military and open the pathway for the aircraft go in. And then, of course, the actual flying in of the Delta Force and law enforcement to do the raid. Oh, by the way, you also had to consider the weather.
Yeah.
And this operation, as reported, was planned to occur about a week ago. That was delayed for a host of reasons. Then you had a bad spat of weather, and you had to make sure you had good weather because you're flying these helicopters in at night, no light, night vision goggles, 100 feet off the ground.
Yeah, Colonel, finally, that's the thing. I mean, listen, I've done some flying before. When you're at 100 feet off the ground, right, no matter what your electronic aids are, a little twitch on the control yoke, and you're in trouble at the speeds they do. You're toast. You're piling into the ocean there. And whenever I see and hear this stuff, Colonel, 100 feet off the ground, basically the distance between home plate to first base, that just amazes me. These pilots,
And you have to consider every possible wire that you might fly and hit as you're going through that. And again, you're flying with NVGs, night vision goggles, because obviously you can't see anything that goes down. But these guys are spectacular. And obviously, as an old soldier, my hat is off to the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, guardians from Space Force that were involved in this operation. Could have went bad a million different ways.
All right.
It was conducted flawlessly. Apparently, a few of our soldiers were, in fact, injured going into the stronghold. But thank God, no one killed and no major piece of equipment was, in fact, lost or captured.
Our CBS News military analyst, U.S. Army Colonel retired Jeff McCausland. Colonel, thank you for your analysis. We appreciate it. Take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks. Colonel, a retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland there. All right. Man, oh, man, oh, man. The weekend occurrence in Venezuela. We continue with our deep analysis of this locally, nationally, right, left, center. Terry Cowgill joins us right now. He of Substack.com and the blog Mushy Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, or Mushy Moderates for Red Meat, or something like that. And CTNewsJunkie.com. Terry, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Well, not bad. I had a question for you. Maybe you could answer me.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm sitting in a red light in Bridgeport and I take off prematurely because some guy's trying to carjack me, do I still get a ticket?
From what I understand, Terry, the way the law is written, supposedly on some of the red light stuff, there has to be a human review somewhere.
Oh, all right. So it could detect mitigating circumstances.
Yes, the 357 that was pointed at my head might get me out of that thing. But speaking of getting out, there's a segue. Mr. Maduro got out of his country with a little coddling from the U.S. What are your thoughts on what we saw on the weekend?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the first thought that came to my mind is this legal? And of course, if you're watching the commentary on television and on the radio, you know, there's a lot of disagreement over whether or not the president was obligated to go to Congress first.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, obviously. I think they would have been wise to go to the Gang of Eight, because I think, as you know, that these are senior ranking members of Congress.
Yeah.
And also people on the Intel Committee and Foreign Relations Committees. These people, these are serious people. There's a lot of unserious people in Congress, but these are serious people.
Yeah.
I really don't think they would have leaked anything. But he just went ahead and did it, and there's no question. And as Jim Hines said, and even as Chris Murphy probably reluctantly admitted, Maduro is a really bad guy.
Yeah.
He's not even a legitimate ruler, because it looks like that last election that he won was certainly rigged.
Yeah.
But then the question is, why did we really go in? And it all goes back to all of the posturing and positioning that happened earlier on with the drug. Oh, it's terrible because there's drug trafficking coming out of there. We're blowing up boats and all this stuff. But then we saw that actually Donald Trump doesn't care about drugs because and he pardoned the former president of Honduras, Mr. President Orlando. Or Hernandez, and he was convicted of trafficking literally hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States and was pardoned by Donald Trump before he even began serving very much of his sentence. So I don't buy the whole thing about drugs. I think it was a pretext to coming in and taking the oil, which Donald Trump has said that's what they're going to do. They're going to take over the oil. And it was also to, it was regime change and all of that. But, you know, no, I don't buy the argument that we're doing a humanitarian gesture here and just trying to do something nice for the Venezuelan people, because that's not the way foreign policy operates.
Well,
not in this administration.
Yeah. And listen, even in past years in Central and South America, we all know that. But Terry, like you just said, the notion that it gets rid of, like you said, what everybody said is pretty much a dictator, not a guy who won a legitimate election when you have a Nobel Prize winner cheering on Mr. Trump. It does give him a bit of cover, though. It does.
Yeah, I think that was the cover that he needed, basically. And fortunately for him.
Nope. Terry, you there? Did we lose Terry? Oh, there you are. You
can
broke
you
up
me?
A little. Yeah, now I can. Yes, yes.
Oh.
Yes, the CIA didn't like what you were saying, Terry, so they cut you off. But go ahead, yes.
Maduro is a very unsympathetic character.
Yes, yes.
But we're to take the oil, as Donald Trump says, and we're going to be basically running the country.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting. Yes, absolutely. Sure. Sure.
Yeah. And then Marco Rubio talk show tour and had to clean it up and said, oh, no, we're not going to be running the country. I don't really know what to believe at this point.
Is Colombia next? Is Cuba? You know, Terry, you and I are old enough to remember when Cuba was a big vacation spot and honeymoon spot. What could go wrong, Terry? Let's do this in Cuba. Let's get Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro to run all those resorts again, and everybody wins, right? Or am I looking at this too simplistically?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could you could turn Venezuela into a Mecca, I suppose. I don't know what they would see exactly, but I'm sure it's a very nice place.
Yeah.
I did see the reaction of most of the people, most of the Connecticut's congressional delegation.
Yeah.
And I thought that Hines had a pretty measured response. I think he was sharply critical because Hines is on the Gang of Eight
as
the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was at the fact that that committee of the Gang of Eight was not even tipped off at all, not even like a brief 5-minute phone call.
Yeah.
So, but you know, Murphy was the usual bastard self, and you know, he's trying to obviously he's playing for a leadership role in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And I think he might be trying to run for president. Yeah. I don't know. There's varying theories on that.
Yeah.
But he was pretty harsh about it.
Sure.
Blumenthal, he grounded his response more in legal terms.
Yeah.
And I don't really know if it is legal. I mean, and somebody brought this up, I think it was on the Bulwark, who said that, okay, if an FBI agent was in France, in Paris, he's walking down the street and he sees Roman Polanski sitting at a table outside a cafe, and he slapped the cuffs on him because Roman Polanski...
Does he still face charges?
Assaulting a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, my God. Remember that? Oh,
so
awful.
Could you just arrest him and say, you're wanted in the United States? Come with me. I'm flying you back.
Oh, man.
I don't profess to be a lawyer, but there's some interesting questions being raised.
There sure are. Folks, check out his stuff. Of course, he's on the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and check out the blog Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Our friend Terry Cowgill. Terry, thank you. Next week, we'll talk about maybe if Chris Murphy is actually bombastic or not. We'll dive into that, okay?
Okay.
All right, Terry.
Take care.
Thanks. Terry Cowgill, right here on WICC.